Like, if I'm, for me to fucking sit here, man, and ask you and ask anyone listening to this and ask anyone on Twitter and be like, guys, give me your Bitcoins, your precious, rare, scarce forever, never replaced, replenishable Bitcoins, and I'll trade you a rare piece of myself. It fucking better be a good piece. It better be a good piece.
What's going on, my fellow Bitcoiners? I'm John Chenow, and welcome to the Bitcoin Path Podcast. This is a show where we have deeper conversations about Bitcoin and self-sovereignty, about how this new magic internet money is changing the world and changing ourselves at the same time. I'm really excited to have Madix joining me today. Madix is an artist and all-around just amazing Bitcoiner. I had the pleasure of meeting him in person at the Pleb Party in Miami, and we got to spend a little bit of time over the course of that conference. And Madix, welcome to the show, man. Thanks for coming on.
And thank you very much for having me. Thank you. And yeah, it was a pleasure meeting you down there too. Pleb Party was fucking amazing. I can't wait for the next one. You did a great job pulling that all together. And yeah, man, it's just, this is what we really got out of Miami, was these, you know, great face-to-face connections with other fantastic Bitcoiners. So it's a pleasure to be on and excited to see what we get into today.
100%. You know, that was the base reasoning for us throwing that party. And really throwing all of the other meetups was just fostering those in-person interactions that, you know, as much as we are connecting online and ideating or going deep into the rabbit hole, so to speak, on our own, in the internet, getting together in person like that, you know, it just adds this whole other dimension of reality to the Bitcoin network. That's pretty exciting. So the energy was just off the chain, and yeah, really looking forward to like bringing everyone back in Miami again next year. I think it's gonna it's like the exponential growth of of celebration and all of that combined would be awesome.
Yeah, we'll go shooting again. That was excellent. That was one of the highlights.
Yeah, man.
Trip for me. So all you guys that missed it,
that's right,
like, ridiculous.
yeah we to just inform everyone, all the listeners, so I threw together a small firearm training. What was that, the day before the conference,
or no, it was after.
Okay. Yeah, I guess it was the week after the conference, yeah. And we had a couple of people come out and do some tactical handgun training. And you and Ben Kaufman, right? Was the other guy?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was great. We were like shooting behind beamers the beamers were the other one. Yeah, anyways, getting distracted. it was fun. So, Madix, can you just give a little bit of an intro to yourself, to who, what you're focusing on right now, and a little bit of your background in Bitcoin?
Yeah, so I create artwork, Bitcoin-inspired artwork, liberty-inspired artwork, individualism inspired stuff, kind of like the opposite of what the majority of artists are out in the world. You know, not a communist. So that's been the central focus of basically all of my work. And I've been an artist for a number of years, working on the brand Madix and doing all sorts of kind of big paintings, and really work to develop my own kind of styles and make my stuff as unique as I could. And then in 2019, I took on the opportunity through Bitcoin Brains to start working with Francis Pouliot and them in the creation of Bull Bitcoin. So I created all the kind of branding merch and the first series of merch designs and whatnot for Bull, and I'm still working on that kind of stuff today. And pushing forward with the art stuff, I'm creating, in response to the whole NFT mania, I'm creating these things I jokingly call PNFTs, which are physical NFTs. When I saw what they were doing with the NFT, saying like, oh, well, the value is the artist's signature and all this kind of shit. And I was like, well, you can do that with Bitcoin. So using CoinKite's Open Dimes, I've been putting hundreds of thousands of sats onto pieces of artwork that I'm selling, and then transferring the Bitcoins to the art from a known Madex wallet. And I'm working on some cool stuff there. I got lined up with Francis, where I'll be using a vanity address, so 1MVTEX, to fund all these things. Probably starting in the next batch, I got about 30 or so that are kind of ready to start slowly releasing leading up to Christmas. And yeah, so that keeps me busy. And then I'm just, you know, trying to survive the insanity of the world that everyone is all going through in their own kind of way. I'm up in Canada, which is probably one of the worst places on earth to be going through it. But luckily I'm over in Alberta, which is above Montana. And we so far have had the lightest experience. And so I'm, you know, more inspired than ever of the importance of Bitcoin, of the importance of free and individualist thinking, and doing whatever I can with my life and my career as an artist to forward sovereign ideas.
Awesome, dude. Yeah, we've talked a little bit about you being in Canada, and just, I don't know, every time I think about my brothers in Canada and sisters in Canada, I'm just like, man, we gotta throw a line to you somehow, get you out. But ultimately, there's, you know, we've talked about, like, there's really no like one silver bullet solution right now, right? In terms of finding an alternative plan,
yeah,
jurisdictionally.
I mean, there's pretty much nowhere to go. There's nowhere to go, really, at this point. It's kind of like, unfortunately, you're stuck where you are. Because just, especially if you got root, like I got a lot of foundations and assets and things here. So for me to physically move would be a huge effort. And I was working towards that slowly, like pre-COVID stuff. Was under no circumstances planning to stay in Canada forever. But when the world kind of went crazy, that just limited the options of places to go. And then on top of that, you know, the whole moving. So that, and then I went through this whole thing about like, holy shit, I got to escape Canada. And there was just really nowhere that wasn't, you know, a couple political decisions away from being in the exact same horrible situation, that's going on here. So I made the choice to stay. What would be horrible would be to uproot kind of all my stuff, move the studio, pack everything up into shipping containers and get it, you know, down, say, into the States or into Mexico or South America somewhere or wherever in the world. And then just only to have, you know, maybe a couple months in, they change the rules and, you know, now it's all the same shit I'm dealing with here. But now I don't have the, you know, 20 years of experience living in the place. And mm-hmm. So, but for the most part, I mean, like people where I'm at, it's really the cities. Like the cities are just these sludge cesspools of just horrible people and just horrible ideas. And that seems to be like where it's the worst. As soon as I get out into rural Alberta, up into the oil fields, just into the countryside, into the farming areas, I mean, the majority that I've had the privilege of interacting are also against this stuff and just, you know, but it's like when you're in the city, it really impacts you very directly because of the kind of lifestyle you have in the city. When you're out in the countryside or you're out in the oil field, there's not really that much effect. So it's kind of, you know, the people who are willing to fight the hardest don't really have a reason or motivation to fight because it's not really affecting their lives. Even like the mask mandates and all that stuff, it was just happening in the cities, not happening in the countryside anywhere. So kind of an interesting dynamic to see the way things are going. We just had an election in the city I'm in, and, you know, in both major cities here, just full blown communist mayors elected. So just, I think like the cities are just going to become these black holes. They're all going to collapse. They're going to loot. Like already there's massive flight, people trying to get out of the major cities, trying to get out into the countryside, get out into rural areas, you know, out into the mountains. And I think that's just going to kind of continue to happen. And you'll have sort of an Atlas Shrugged situation where all the intelligence of the cities leaves. And then, you know, all the communists can starve each other and find out how wonderful socialism is.
Yeah. I'd see the same thing happening. It is really interesting to see how the localities are really the variance in local jurisdictions is accelerating. The different for example, in California, where I am right now, if you go to LA is complete dystopian, like zombie apocalypse shithole. From my perspective, right? I mean, some people who live in LA may think differently, but you have homeless encampments just like spread all over the place. And everywhere you go, you're getting harassed to like show your mask, to put on a mask or show your vax status. And that's kind of happening in multiple cities around the US. But then just an hour away in Orange County, it's completely different. Like you walk around without a mask. You're not getting asked for a vax status. You're not getting asked to put on your mask when you walk into stores or anything like that. And we're in California. And a lot of people think that all of California is like LA, but it's not really like that. And I've even heard that one of my friends went to Austin recently and from San Diego, and, you know, she was getting harassed for not wearing a mask and stuff in Austin, in Texas. And so it is sort of, but then within Texas, you have, you know, much more freedom outside and in the rural areas as well. So yeah, the local jurisdictional dynamics are going to be very important going forward, and kind of knowing which neighborhoods are free neighborhoods. It might even get to that point. And so, yeah, I think there's a really interesting way to think about this and strategize with also with looking at like, yeah, we want to move to a strategic location that's going to be friendly to property rights and to personal freedoms on the macro political scale. That would be great. But there's also something to be said for staying put in one place and actually fighting for freedom in a particular local jurisdiction, because that's actually more, it's more feasible to do than like coordinate some massive political movement to change a state or something like that. So.
Yeah. Like, you know, sovereign individual, just the breakup into the areas. It's already, I happening. I think I'm finding, you know, you just get into certain areas and they're just like, nope, we're not doing any of that. And you know, it's only really in the cities that areas get like highlighted and focused on and attacked by the media and whatever. But I mean, out in the country, there's just areas where this stuff doesn't exist. But I think the key for everybody to survive this whole thing is just being mobile and having the optionality. So that's one thing I'm working on. So it's really going to change what Madex kind of is here. I'm working over the next 6 months, get all my commission work done and I got just a bunch of inventory I got to push through and a whole bunch of ideas I want to get done. And then after that, I'm kind of planning to just kind of pack up the studio and become and just change the way Madex operates to be more mobile, so that I kind of have the ability to leave if I need to and go kind of wherever. So I'm looking at things like, you know, building an art studio in a 18-wheeler semi truck, you know, have it in the back, right? And then just if I need a roll, I just, you know, got to get a semi truck and then just click on and then I can drive it anywhere. That's kind of one of the jokey ones with the studio, but it'd be sweet. But
shipping containers, you put those on trailers as well, right?
Yeah. So it could be something like that. And then the other thing is, this is pretty possible in the United States and probably most of Europe and a lot of the kind of cities that have good supply chains and whatnot. But just flying in, for example, my plan kind of here in the next couple months or so is to go to Austin, and then I'm just going to buy a bunch of supplies in Austin and like rent a studio there for a month. And just create a bunch of stuff that, and you know, call it like the Austin series of work. And there will be, you know, whatever I'm able to make while I'm down there. And then when I run out of materials, just kind of move to the next spot and maybe, you know, go down into Mexico and do sort of the same thing or wherever. And I kind of like that idea, like almost like pop-up studios. And I like that because it kind of like, I have like a base style of art. Those are like my kind of most rare paintings, which are the big like multi-layer ones. I just sold one the other day that was pretty happy about, this big one from 2018, 40 by 60. So that one's gone. I think I only have two more from that series. There were originally 12. I only got two left. So those are just going to become super scarce, and then you know, every once in a while I'll have like the time to be able to make something crazy like that. But then the rest of the time, I'm just kind of working with the materials or the people or the connections that I have at that time. And so it adds like kind of a new like fun and creativity to the work for me. Because right now, I mean, like I've been doing it for so long that the process, you know, it's highly creative, but it's like I have it broken down into a step-by-step sort of system. So it's kind of closer. I'm closer to like manufacturing the artwork than like, not like, I know, like when I started making these things, I had no idea like what they would look like when they were done or what would happen. And now I still have that, but I have a lot more control over it. So I think in the new, like those pop-up studio things will be fun. 'Cause you know, maybe I'm somewhere where they don't have any, I don't know, like any acrylic paints or something. So then I got to use like watercolors, and then all of a sudden I got like this series of Madex stuff that's like made with, you know, watercolor, which I would never like, I wouldn't do that in the studio. Well, I use it sometimes for like backfills and things like that, but I'd never do like 100% watercolor Madex. But now like maybe there will be a couple of those that end up existing. So I kind of get excited about like, landing somewhere, and then like just what I'm able to find in like the nearby stores and like maybe a couple Amazon orders or whatever becomes like the materials I use to make whatever cool thing, you know.
Yeah, man.
So that's kind of the plan.
Oh yeah, I imagine that when you're going to these different places as well, that and interacting with different people, that there will be a diversification of like inspiration or just what you're experiencing in life is somewhat different. So that's going to color or contribute somehow to your work, and affect it in some way, right? That I know for me personally, in my creative work or in my thought life and everything, traveling really kind of opens up a lot of optionality for me, or just for me to think about things and look at life and under a different light. So I wonder if that will have an effect as well.
Oh yeah, it 100% will. I mean, like, I was so charged up when I left Miami, and I had like a notebook filled with ideas and stuff I'm kind of lining up to make. So just being in that kind of flow state where I'm bouncing around, like, new environment is always stimulating to the mind, new conversations, new people, or even just, you know, the new conversations with people you already know. So yeah, it'll be fun, man. Like, it's kind of interesting, like, because I mean, I've been pretty like devastated just about the way the world's been going, and you know, it can be hard to find the positivity in it all, right? But I feel like I'm starting to like actually be grateful for kind of what's going on. I mean, on the Bitcoin side, obviously it's pretty sweet. It's an absolute perfect scenario for Bitcoin's pitch. But I mean, even for myself, it's just it's completely kind of changing the future of the brand and the way, and forcing me to kind of come up with new ways of doing things, and so I don't know. We'll see. We gotta make the most of all this stuff that's going on, because it's pretty easy to get, I mean, I've had a really hard time with it, getting, you know, you get caught up, you have all these plans, all these ideas, all these things you want to do, and then all of a sudden they're not possible, because the government, and, you know, is fucking completely out of their mind, and then the people are just following along with it, which is, you know, even worse. It'd be one thing if the government was trying to do insane shit, but everybody was like, no, you're not doing that. But you know, unfortunately it's
yeah,
not like,
man,
that, but
the mass compliance,
but whatever, we got to make the most of it.
So discouraging. Yeah, the mass compliance is so discouraging sometimes. It's
yeah, but hey, you spend time around Bitcoiners, yeah, and you know, it that's what gives you hope. And you got it. I mean, you know, doing things like this, having these kind of conversations, and you know, Twitter is great. Like, Twitter, I, you know, I have to be careful with it, because sometimes there's also a lot of negative information on there and stuff. But you know, for the most part, it's makes you feel less alone in this whole kind of thing, right? I saw somebody said something the other day that was great, which is, you know, it's easy to forget how many decent people there are in the world, because decent people just leave you the fuck alone. You know, it's just the loud,
so true,
squawking ones that we gotta get annoyed by all the time, and you know, we have to remember that actually they're not the majority. It sure may seem like it, but they're far from it. And you know, even all these narratives that we hear, in the way, like, all the, you know, the majority of the information is packed to be very hopeless. Like, all this stuff that they're doing is just designed to destroy our stamina to get through it. Like, it's to beat us into submission, to discourage us. And you know, it's not the reality. And I think we're going to see that over. I was already, before the Corona stuff even started up, I was already getting all these signs, seeing sort of a return to the traditional, which is, you know, in fact, returning to hard money, which is, you know, Bitcoin, but like, where products that are built are actually valuable and actually last, you know, and the design and creation of a product is around winning the sale and maintaining the customer over the rest of that customer's life. First, you know, the fiat model, which is just make the shittiest product as possible so you can scam the end buyer and then disappear and into, you know, like Walmart and like all these other mass manufacturing places that just distribute crap stuff, you know, they're all the same as shitcoin companies, right? But, you know, instead of buying shares, you're buying a vacuum cleaner that'll work for, you know, a month, maybe, you know.
Right.
So right. And now with all this stuff that's happening, I'm like, oh yeah, the return to the traditional is definitely happening. Like, even if we just look across the Bitcoin community, we see, you know, this mass push to be like, okay guys, like, you know, families, the, you know, hit the gym, you know, steal sun steak, you know, out of, mm-hmm. and especially a hard push out of like all the superficial sort of product, kind of stuff. And you know, that,
like Lambos.
Motivation and inspiration to save. And like when you want to buy something, you know, like we all know this, Bitcoin naturally forces you to make the best decision possible on whatever the purchase is, because you don't want to ever have to buy that product again, or you want that product to cost you as little as possible because you don't mm-hmm. want to get rid of the Bitcoins. But if it's something you need and you have to, then you gotta, and you don't want any problems. So you're going to find the best possible one, that you can. And, you know, where versus the fiat system where your money is worthless. So the incentive is just to get something that works today. You know, you're not really worried about it because the money's going to zero anyway. So it's better to have a, you know, a vacuum cleaner that works for 2 weeks than,
yeah,
you know, than not even having the ability to buy the 2 week vacuum cleaner, like the disposable vacuum.
Yeah. The disintegration of quality is so depressing. I've had sometimes when I look around at just all the shit that, you know, we've been buying, I've been buying all my life, but it's just been getting worse and worse. Like a pair of jeans, you know, and a lot of it has to do with inflation and everything, like people trying to keep prices, companies trying to keep prices around the same, and also trying to lower their manufacturing costs because those are rising, yeah. All the material costs and all of that. But it is also, you see it in engineered obsolescence and machinery and everything like that. But especially, but like the jean example, if you look at a pair of Levi's that were made in Mexico, just like when I was a teenager, the kind that I would buy, just a, like normal 501s that were made in Mexico, not even made in America, but they were like high quality denim and everything that were made in, and they would last for a long time. And they just had a certain feel to them. As soon as they started making them in China, it just, they look and feel completely different. And you can tell, that it's just like a cheapification of everything.
Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah, it's bad, man.
Yeah,
it's going to bounce back, man. Like, people are going to stop putting up with this stuff. They're going to stop putting up with this shit product quality. And,
right.
I mean, there already is a huge push, just if you look out into like the popular design of things. Mm-hmm. Again, it's still fiat, but you can see that, like, for example, a lot of the interior design that's popular right now is really kind of authentic, you know, rock, wood, stone, iron, warm lighting, black wiring, you know, that kind of ambience of, you know, authentic materials. A lot of it is fiat mm-hmm. and bullshit and fake. But I mean, you can see that it's like people like that stuff because it reminds them of stuff that they know is of quality. And, you know, pretty soon mm-hmm. here, we're going to be building stuff with that looks like that, because it is like that. It's not just like, you know, a show set, like a stage set. Right.
Right.
And, yeah, cause like brands, man, like brands are all fucked now. Like every great historical brand is toast, because, you know, except for maybe a couple of them that never sold out. But I mean, like the whole fiat game, like it's such a scam, right? So these are like companies that have been owned for, you know, 100 years or so by one family or the same kind of group or like a chain of shareholders that actually care. And, you know, they've built this quality brand based off of their products and the ability for those products to, you know, solve solutions and all that. And then the private equity guys just come in and they buy these brands that are the only reason the brand exists is because of the product. Like, you don't, brand doesn't come before product. Product creates brand, right? And they come right in and buy these things and then just absolutely gut the product side of it. And they just try and coast and rinse as much. So they vaporize, you know, the production costs and the design and all that. They just completely destroy the company and get everything manufactured cheap and very little effort and thought. And then they basically just ride the brand until the brand dies. And they, because they're able to scan, because like the guy who owns the brand originally, let's say it costs him $5 to make, you know, the jeans, say, and then, you know, he sells them for 10. Well, the private equity guys come in and they make the jeans cost 50 cents and they keep selling them for 10 until people stop buying the jeans, and then eventually the brand dies, right? But by that time, you know, if you're going from a $5 cost to a 50 cent cost on a $10 sale, you know, you are, by the time people kind of catch on that, like, the soul of the brand has been ripped out, they've made, you know, tens of thousands of X just by doing that. So it's kind of the name of the game is, you know, it's like kill and squeeze to the last drop and then go find another brand and do the same sort of thing. Like with the designer stuff, if you compare product qualities of, say, like, you know, like a Louis Vuitton bag, from 1950, you know, 1920, 1980, you know, and then all of a sudden you hit about the 90s sort of started, but early 2000, and then like it really hit like after 2008, and then to today, man, today the product quality between like a bag from one of these designer companies today versus you know, 2005 or 1995, it's unbelievable. And I'm not sure, because I don't know enough about watches, but I think the same thing is happening on the watch side of things. We're seeing like the price of like a lot of older watches going kind of way up, watches that were made in the 60s and 70s, which I found kind of interesting, and a lot of old stuff. I mean, like vehicles is kind of another interesting one to look at.
Oh yeah.
The 100%. New, like, so like I'm a partner in my family's construction company, and we just got a bunch of new trucks, and the trucks suck, man. They're horrible.
Yeah. So what kind of trucks?
Now we're like,
did you get
like you know, GMCs, Chevys, right?
Oh yeah.
At like pickup trucks. And now it's like, well, fuck, now we're going back and looking, we're like trying to find like low mileage trucks from like 2005, you know, 2004, 2000, even like going back, man.
Yeah.
And the market price in Canada for these vehicles is massive. Like I was looking, I really want a dually, like, you know, like in what's that fucking TV show? The one that everybody, Yellowstone, right? The guy's got that giant fucking dually truck. I actually want one to pull this fucking huge trailer, but I'm looking around and I finally found one. And that was the year I wanted. And it was like $12,000 and needed a new transmission.
Yeah.
And it's just because that fucking year of this Chevy dually diesel was just like one of the best fucking years they made it. And it's before, you know, the Fiat really got a hold of it. Like, I know the problem was bad back then because, you know, we know that like the standards started ending, like the main one, you know, 1971 in the States and after. But I think it didn't just happen overnight that all of a sudden now everything sucks, right? It's just a gradual process, kind of like a kid when they're young, they're pushing their parents, trying to see how much they can get away with, you know, they go a little bit for a little bit for a little bit more, or kind of like anything else, right? And then the Fiat system's just been doing that over the last 50 years, just edging forward slowly, seeing how much people are willing to take. And turns out if you move slow enough, you can accomplish whatever you want, no matter what you think people will do about it. Because if it's slow enough, they won't even notice it, you know, happening. I.e. this slow plunge into communism that's going down right now, right?
Yeah, I mean, they've even given up on the slow transition at this point. Yeah. It feels like they're like, oh, we can just like fucking shove this shit as fast as we want now. No one even cares. But yeah, I've seen the truck thing. The truck thing is really close to my heart, because I worked as a mechanic for a while, and I was working on some of these new trucks. And compared, so at the time, I was driving a 1992 Ford diesel IDI, which is one of the first iterations of the diesel engine that Ford introduced to their consumer market. And it was the engine was designed by Navistar International Harvester, which was a commercial, and so it was like a commercial grade engine. And this thing was just a massive tank of an engine. Like it was a giant cast iron block, just and a V8 cast iron block, and it would run it could run forever, you know. if it was maintained. It just would last for a really long time. And I liked that particular year because it was it had a mechanical fuel injection system that could run without any electricity. So once, like, if the engine was hot, you could literally start the thing and then just run it, run the entire truck without any kind of electrical input. So you're dealing with that. And then the Ford bodies at that time had like really thick gauge, sheet metal. And, you know, I was kind of restoring it and working on it. And at the same time, I was working on these new trucks in this truck upfitting company that we're kind of putting new electronics in and putting cranes and all the contraptions for work trucks in my job. And just the seeing the variance in quality between the two is just insane. And yeah, the new trucks were nice and comfy. They're quiet. They had all the computers and everything. But we see how fragile that system is. Like, we have thousands and thousands of trucks just sitting, waiting to be manufactured because we don't have the computer chips now to finish them off. And
yeah,
dude. So anyways, that's a fascinating phenomenon.
Yeah, I mean, like the trucks too. I find I have this thing with vehicles. Well, when it comes to the trucks, where when I see a pickup truck with rims on it, I'm just like, what the fuck, man? Like, are you okay? Like, to me, like
yeah.
But then when I see a fucking old pickup truck that's just fucking dented, rusted, scratched up, mud all over it, you know, like that's the way it's supposed to be, you know. It's like proof of work almost on the vehicle,
yeah,
that it's being,
well, they're tools,
put to the
right?
use that it was designed for. Yeah, they're right. Fully tools. And but
so that,
yeah,
that's something something I was thinking about that you mentioned earlier, and that I find fascinating about your work in particular, and I see a commonality in Bitcoin in general, to where there's the I'm trying to think of how to ask this. You mentioned Madex as a brand. And you know, I know you're fully individualist and capitalist and wanting to produce, But also, there's an artistic element of your work, and I'm just wondering, like, how does the artistic pursuit and the capitalistic brand name pursuit kind of come together for you? Because a lot of artists now are basically communist hippie type people who don't believe in money. They don't believe in they're kind of wanting to withdraw from the system entirely. But they also have an extreme eye for quality in artistic work, at least the ones that are good do. Right? So
yeah,
does that make sense? I'm really fascinated by this.
I mean, the whole we got to remember what happened with the whole world of art in the first place. It's been completely corrupted. It's been fiat corrupted over the last little while. So to kind of like historically, artists have always been capitalists, tradespeople, right? Working on something. You know, we have all these like stories mm-hmm. here and there about guys who never made money, were poor their whole lives, whatever, making art. Okay. But like, you know, for the most part, art was for example, like Michelangelo was not poor. You know, Da Vinci was not poor. They were providing services with their artistic skills to industry. Artists in terms of we can say like creative visualization is the key component to producing pretty well anything. Before you build a house, you gotta draw it. Before you design a car, you gotta draw. Like everything that we build has to be drawn at some point. And then, you know, from there we get into the abstract stuff with the art for storytelling, the art for history books, the art for all. So it's really traditionally an industry. And, you know, and then we have the explanations of life and all, and then we kind of get a little bit further away from the industry. But at the core, those base skills, their primary use is in production. So what, like, nowadays we got this horrible problem where the artist has fallen, and this, I believe, is a product of essentially the way the art markets went. So what happened was back, I guess it'd be starting in the 50s, 60s, and it was modern art did this. All of a sudden, we got these artists that are on the scene, like, you know, Jackson Pollock, Andy Warhol, Basquiat, whole list of them, Keith Haring. Those are kind of the most famous ones, so I don't get too obscure for you guys. But all this art is being created, and then this brand of people appears called the dealers. And, you know, the dealers start going around and finding all these artists and then buying their art and then bringing it to galleries. They're dealing between galleries. Galleries are selling to collectors. And it just started to become a pretty popular thing as people started becoming so rich, because when you have all the money in the world and you've bought everything, the kind of last thing that you can spend money on is art, really, right? And what happened was the demands just started exploding for modern art, and the dealers were getting so rich selling all this stuff, and the galleries are getting rich, and everybody's getting rich. But then what happens is we encounter a supply problem, which is the amount of artists at any given time that are extremely talented, extremely capable, extremely driven. Like Camille Paglia describes an artist as an obsessive, an intensive obsessive, borderlining on a psychopath, like that, with the dedication to producing fine work. So we have now a supply shortage. We have huge demand from all these people with their fiat money, and we have very little supply. So how do we get around that? How did the dealers get around it? They started making shit up. And this is when guys were going around and finding there became their teams that would be going around the United States, going around the world, looking for artists, finding them, buying up a shitload of their artwork, and then essentially pumping their name through the channels to get the value of their artwork. There's one guy who he would find artists, he would buy up a whole bunch of their work, and then he would publish a biography on their life, and would dramatize it and make it, and basically the whole book was like a sales book. And then he would go and give that to all these, he would give it as a gift to these fancy collectors and act like, you know, the artist had been around for forever and he's an amazing person, and this is just some guy he found off the street and then wrote a book about, right? And then pump the value of the artwork. So, and there's all sorts of crazy stuff like this that, like, I could go on for a long time about the logistics of what was happening, and a lot of funny stories. And, you know, dealers would make, they could make like 80 million in a day just with a couple of phone calls, calling one collector who has one guy is like, I want this painting. And he's like, oh, there's no way I could even find that painting. Even if I can, I bet whoever has it wouldn't sell it. Meanwhile, he knows the guy who has it. He knows the guy wants to sell it, goes to the guy who wants to sell it, and is like, you know, the best price I can get is this. And, you know, I could maybe bring it to market, but honestly, there's not high demand, and all, like, the whole thing is just, is just scamming. But anyway, so glossing over into what happened was, they're creating these artists, and it basically just started to progress to lower and lower the quality of work. So that's where we got all this stuff like big brushes, you know, it's what a single brush stroke, and then it's like $20 million for this fucking painting, right? And it's like, they just had to manufacture the supply, because creativity is as scarce as Bitcoin, and we don't know what the supply cap is, and we don't know how much circulating supply there is. We don't know any of the details, but it's scarce, right? And so that, like, basically destroyed, you know, the quality of art and the interpretation of art, because now it became about sales and the pitch and this kind of snooty attitude, like, oh, like, if you don't think it's art, you don't understand it, you don't get it. And then meanwhile, behind the scenes, a lot of this art was being used to launder money, to evade taxes, to move money. There was all, like, the whole thing was basically a money services business at one layer, kind of dressed up in this historical past vision of what art is. And they basically were like, hey, the Picasso was famous for all of these reasons, and now the guy with the single brush stroke on the canvas, he's great for all of these reasons. That essentially, and that, so now look at this. Now you got all these people that are at home, and then they're looking at this art and they're seeing really fucking bad art, and they're looking at it and they're being like, holy shit, $10 million. I could make shit like that. So then they start making shit like that.
Yeah.
So it compounds because of the success, the bad art started happening. It compounds the production of it. And then what I find today with 99% of, you know, the artists around is like, and it's like, this is, there is an obvious demonstration of lacking mastery. And it's almost like you're good at nothing. You were good at fucking nothing. So you decided to become an artist, and then you don't have fucking skills, but then you can be like, well, that's part of the art, you know, and like draw a shitty picture and like think it's valuable because of who you are as a person. Right. Like, it's, you know, so, and that's just like fucking everywhere. And then on top of that, you know, it's coupled with all these socialist ideas, you know, that like about money and blah, 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 blah. And like, you know, it's totally like anybody who says they don't need money, like, I'm not interested in money. Yeah, that's usually the person who's the most interested.
Yeah.
You know, and then anyway, yeah. So for me, like, I give a fuck so much about mastery. And like, when I started producing the artwork for Madex, I just wanted to be the best that I possibly could. I wanted everyone who saw my stuff to think it was the most, at the least, the most unique thing, at least had never seen anything like it before. And kind of ground that out, and I'm really focused on the skills. So the capitalist side of it for me comes in. It's like, well, okay, my interpretation of art and what I believe is, you know, the only correct interpretation of art is when somebody, like, even when people call me an artist, I get a little bit nervous about it because of this definition. It's like, no matter what somebody's trade is, what their skill is, when you read it, to me, like, artist is this level above mastery. It's like, it's like the flow state where you're so, so good at whatever the skill is, that your work and your masterful execution of your work is at a level that is art. And that's when I think someone can bear the title of artist. And, you know, personally, I don't feel really close to that. I think maybe over the next 10 years I can get there. But, you know, like, if somebody's an architect, okay, they're an architect. Then they become a master architect by, you know, Fiat university definition. Okay. But you could be a master architect with a Fiat title and be the fucking shittiest architect ever. You know, it's like the work, the quality of stuff you produce, like, that's where the real, I think, you know, mastery comes from. But anyway, somebody who is excellent and builds like a home or a building or something that is just so, so well done that it reaches this level of art. Like, the building itself is a work of art. You could say the same thing for like an engine in a vehicle. It's like somebody who designed like that, those guys, Koenigsegg, right? Or Koenigsegg. Those supercars, like, this guy is an engine builder and he wanted to build supercars, and then he went out and figured out how to do it, and they invented their own engines, they designed everything, that, and like, it's fucking art, man. The mastery is beyond the ability to describe. So that's where I think kind of the break is. I think if you have a communist artist, somebody who believes that shit, like, 99% chance their art fucking sucks, has very little thought put into it. And a critical thing is more about them than the work. Whereas I want the art that I create with Madex to be incredible with or without me. You know, my life and the way I am, I want that. Like, obviously, that's a great way that I can add value to my art and whatnot. But I want the art to be able to stand alone and speak for itself. And then on the capitalist side, it's like, what is money, right? Well, you know, we're all Bitcoiners here, so we know it's energy and it's time. So in pursuit, like, Madex has to be financially successful, and anyone who really cares about the work that they're doing, even whether it's artistic work or whatever it is, you have to be financially successful in order to realize your potential in that field that you've chosen to master, to work on. You need financial success, because what does the money do? Brings you more staff, more materials, more engineers, you know, more opportunities of where you can work, where you can go. It becomes, right, you know, it drives your ability to create. So Madex really is just like this little ball of energy that's, you know, me right now. And as people buy my art, the energy ball increases. And with that energy, you know, which is Bitcoins or, you know, Fiat at times, then I can use that to start working on some of these projects that, like, one right now, I got like, a series of paintings that I want to do that all have neon, they're neon signs, they're board paintings. But they have neon wired into them at parts, so you can like turn them on and stuff. And that's not, you know, lots of people have done stuff like that. It's not an original idea, but I want to do it for with my work because I think it'll look really well with the script lines. And, you know, that stuff that in order for me to do that on like a single painting, you know, my costs go up pretty high, right? So I send out some quotes and it'll be like 20 grand for this painting. And then the person's like, oh, that's, you know, way over my budget or whatever. And it's like, yes, okay. But also in order for me to make it as epic as it can be and, you know, add all these other things, I need the cash to be able, I need the guarantee on a return to invest that capital to produce something crazy that, you know, costs a lot to make so that I can sell it. So yeah, like I'm extremely driven. Like, and I believe that anybody who is good, who's spent the time, sacrificed the everything else in their life to become good at a specific skill, you know, has a duty obligation to become, to generate capital with that. Cause if the skill that they've chosen is worth something, you know, to the market, then you can build capital and then you can expand and get better, get more detailed, get, you know, faster cars, right? Like faster planes, you know, like more complicated, more complex art. Like when I was talking to Fractal and Crypt down in, Miami, and I was telling him, I was like, man, like I really love the sculpture that you made. I think it looks beautiful. I was talking about the mirror one. But I was like, when I first saw it, man, I thought the whole thing moved. And I was like, it would be fucking super sweet if it moved. Like if it was like if you could spin those discs in it and be like, it'd make like a real like tangible clicking sound, like click, 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 as you like spun it around. And I'm talking to him about this kind of thing. And that's, and then he's like, holy shit, like that's fucking a great idea. I should build something like that. And then, you know, it's like, okay, well, to build what he's doing right now, there's a cost to produce that. And then now you want the whole thing running on a whole bunch of click clacky motor shit, doing a bunch of other kind of like interactive shit that you can touch it with. You're just adding layers of cost, you know, to be able to produce the product. So I don't know if that kind of answers your question, but you know, I think because on the other side, like if you don't have a skill, if you suck at what you're doing, you fucking know it. I think most of these fucking, you know, people do, like they got it, or they're just like really good at lying to themselves or something, right? It's like you're not thinking about money because it's almost like the money won't help you. Like if you're shitty at building a motor and then you get a $10 million investment to build a better motor, but you suck at it, like, you know, it's not going to help you. But if you're fucking the best, you can't wait to get that little bit of investment or that little bit of, or that sale or that whatever that brings you, you know, to the next step. Like I just put in an order just now. Today I just confirmed the order. I just got about like 100 custom stamps made that I'm really excited about. You know,
100 custom stamps.
It cost me like stamps, you know, like ink stamps. So I made all these graphics, and then I got them turned into stamps, and I'm gonna make a whole bunch more. But I mean, like, that's just something that, like, before I was selling art regularly, you know, I'd never dreamed spending like $3,000 on fucking rubber stamps. You know, it just like wouldn't make sense to do unless I was selling, starting to move some art, right? But now I'm able to do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm able to do other things. I hired a studio assistant that's helping me with some stuff now. And, you know, that's all support that I've been getting from the Bitcoin community. That's like, hey, keep creating the stuff, keep making things. And it just allows me to kind of create even cooler stuff. So I'm getting really excited about a bunch of these things. I'm really excited about the new PNFTs. I think that's been really, really well received, and I think everybody should have one. You know, I'm biased to say that, but I think I really do believe they're like one of the coolest things you can have in the Bitcoin world. Most of the stuff I make, I try to like, I want to like, the even the project in general for itself, I was trying to make art for my shitty apartment. You know, I had like a 700 square foot shitty apartment, and I was like, and I'm just like looking at all this like baller art and stuff, you know, and famous artists and this, that. And I'm like, man, fuck that. I'm just going to make my own fucking completely sweet, authentic art piece. Yo, something I noticed, I'm kind of on a roll here, John, but something I noticed the other
day. I'm loving it, man.
Pay attention to how many people you walk into their house and that have like an actually original piece of artwork that's like fucking sweet. Like, just start rolling around and like it's fucking so rare, man. Like, it's super rare. Like, some guys came over here, we had a an event here, and there some guys were here and they're like, man, like, it was just so crazy walking in here. I was like, I have never been to a house in this city that had amazing artwork in it, like real artwork. You know, like, not like anti-suicide signs, like live, laugh, love, you know, like, you know, not like fucking posters or shit like that, like authentic handmade work. And then all of a sudden I realized, I was like, holy shit. And that kind of like went through my mind. And I'm like, there's like very few people I know that had like, that have like high quality art, you know, presented, tastefully presented in their homes. It's interesting, actually. It's kind of a scarce thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I like the whole interior.
But yeah, anyway, hopefully I answered your question.
I think somewhere in there might be an answer to my question.
Perfect.
I'm with you, dude. I think that area is just so such a exciting place to explore, especially when you bring Bitcoin into the equation, right? Which is kind of what I'd like to get into next, of like how is Bitcoin informing or affecting your work and enabling your work, and what are the possibilities for future for future creative development when we have an abundant future that's built on hard money?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's limitless, right? It's completely limitless. And you know, I like the things that I care about the most as a man are instinctive principles that when you look at Bitcoin are the instinctive principles of Bitcoin, really, right? So it's like really care about well-made product. I really care about the design of things. You know, I when I see a poorly designed building, it I'm personally offended, I'm insulted for all of humanity, and I'm ashamed. And I think Bitcoin just stops those things from existing, because the Bitcoin standard will just inevitably through it almost, it applies market forces to fucking everything. And so if you have an architect that only became an architect because they didn't fucking know what else to do, and they went, you know, they went through all the university and whatever, and now they're just designing boxes with, you know, and a lot of this is also like from the fiat demands, because the builders want things to be cheap and all that as well. And, but I like Bitcoin just completely eradicates that stuff, because people don't want to buy a house that has to be, that the maintenance on is so excessive, right? You want to buy, when you're spending Bitcoin on a house, you want to buy a house that requires the least maintenance. The least upkeep. And so that, you know, will motivate builders to build better. And it'll motivate anyone who's doing anything that's offering a product to the market to actually produce something of value. And, you know, that's core, that applies to artwork. Like, for me to fucking sit here, man, and ask you and ask anyone listening to this and ask anyone on Twitter and be like, guys, give me your Bitcoins your precious, rare, scarce forever, never replaced, replenishable Bitcoins, and I'll trade you a rare piece of myself. It fucking better be a good piece. It better be a good piece. And like, so that's like really ties me in. And I mean, like, a lot of these principles I was fortunate enough to learn, you know, when I was younger. My mom, especially, I have to thank for this. She just had such a high respect for quality products and quality manufacturing. And she was all about the philosophy of saving up and getting the best possible thing, you know? So like, if it was a vacuum cleaner, for example, I love the vacuum cleaner example because of Dyson. I'm really big fan of the Dyson company. But anyway, you know, she would save up and buy like a fucking $1,000 vacuum cleaner in like 1985, right? So what's a $1,000 vacuum cleaner in 1985 with inflation today, you know, like bank. But guess what? It's fucking 2021. And when I, you know, if I'm taking care of my mom's house while she's away or what, I fucking use that same vacuum from like 1985, like somewhere in that age range, and it fucking works perfectly, man. It works. And you know, there's other stuff like that, like all the furniture in my house, all the furniture growing up in my house is hardwood, and again, it was just my parents both bought stuff that would last. Like that's actually what Madex even means, you know, that's what it actually means, is built to last. And then my variation of that, like I wanted to create a brand that meant built to last, and you know, it, so Made Forever was the original brand, Made Forever. And then I put like an X divider in the middle of it, and then I started using that in type, and then people would call me like Made X. And then you know, in 2020 I dropped the Forever, and it's just Made X. And now what does Made X mean? Like Made Forever, built to last, you know, being the best you can be as a producer is pretty much my goal for it. But and so like all these kind of values is really gold standard values. And now, and Bitcoin's just the modern placeholder for that. And, you know, the greatest solution. So of all the amazing things that Bitcoin does, what I'm most excited about is the transformation of product. Like when we cut back to these times where it was like, oh, you know, we're going to have flying cars in the future, or we're going to have this in the future, or we're going to have that or whatever. Like it was just generation after generation after generation for a long time of improvements. Like if you just look at like where the pickup truck went from 1950 to 1980, you know, to like I don't know where the line is. Like I should talk to someone. I'm sure there's somebody who's an expert on this. I'd love to speak to like where the line is. But there was a peak point where all of a sudden we started going backwards on the function side, and dressing up like fashion over function, dressing it up like the fiat shitcoin, like Ethereum, great marketing, horrible system. Right. And I feel like that's what the modern day pickup truck is. It fucking looks cool. It's comfortable. And it fucking is a piece of shit. Like, you know, so all these products have these arcs where, and every year, you know, things would get better and things would get better and new technology and figuring things out. And this is in every industry, like pumps for wells, like glass, the glass for homes. Insulation, you know, like roofing material, pavement, concrete, like every single possible thing that you can think of that exists. Computers, right? Computers getting faster and faster. Like everything is just getting better. And then we suddenly have this like apex moment, and every product has it in a different place, where all of a sudden the product quality starts getting sucked out of things. And, and now everything just fucking starts going to shit. And I just can't wait for that to stop, man. Like I get so excited on human potential and human ability and like the brilliant minds that are out there, like working as hard as they can to produce, to solve problems and improve quality of life and to create things that make, you know, life worthwhile, no matter how, from essential to non-essential, whatever it is. And Bitcoin brings back that continuous leveling up where every year we're going to see improvement in all the products. Could not be every year because like how things go are right. You can't predict when genius moments happen or when breakthroughs can happen. But you can work hard toward those. And maybe some things won't update for, 10 years. But I mean, the thing is when they do, it'll be a big one because all that stuff's hard work, right? It's hard work to make a better window, in a home that doesn't lose heat and solves all the problems. It's like when you put a window in a house, there's so many things from an engineering standpoint that you got to think about, depending on the climate, depending on what you want to do with it, and I'm just so excited to see what people are able to build. Hold on. I got someone coming in my house, so give me a moment. Okay, I'm back. Sorry about that, man. Okay.
No worries, brother.
I'm ready. I'm ready to continue.
Okay. I have about just an update on time. Probably got another 15 minutes or so. So we can kind of.
Cool. Yeah, that works perfect for me, man. So.
Cool. Yeah. So.
So what was the question again?
I'm just wondering. Whenever I'm noticing right now that there's a portal opening up, and from my perspective, there's Bitcoin as a portal to an abundant and free and open society that is ushering in the new Renaissance, right? That has the capacity to like inspire human ingenuity in all these fascinating and exciting new ways to bring human civilization to a new level. But there's also a portal towards a dystopian negative timeline that can draw us into a new dark age. That's just defined by death and sameness and complete destruction of human creativity and crushing of the human spirit. And I think that both, like, I'm becoming more and more convinced that both are going to happen at the same time. Does that make sense?
I see that.
And so I'm just wondering, like, what are the main threats that you see and what should we be focusing on now to I don't know to make sure that we ourselves and our families stay on the proper path. I'm kind of pulling this question out of the ether, but I'm just kind of reflecting on everything that you talked about and we've talked about so far, and wanting to kind of keep in consideration the present reality that we're in, and what the pitfalls are, what the dangers are at the same time.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Well, like, so I see what you're saying splitting into two worlds for sure. Inevitably at some point, some place in the world is going to say, hey, like, we're going to operate on a Bitcoin standard. We're not going to use fiat money. And, you know, there's a lot of technology that has to be built for this to happen. I think it's a long ways away. I think we're in the But then, you know, as things like ideas like Lightning continue to be come up with, and different, you know, I'm sure there'll be different versions of Lightning. I'm sure there'll be lots of different ideas. I don't know, like it's hard to know what Bitcoin will look like in terms of its operation at that time, but I do believe that, you know, it's going to be money. And at some point, a country is going to say, hey, okay, we're going to use this as our standard. We're going to operate on a Bitcoin standard. And we're going to operate a free market economy. And, you know, like the United, when they created the United States, it brain drained the smartest people from every country, culture, race on earth came to the United States. And that's going to happen again. But it'll be some place that decides that, that essentially there's not, like, we don't really have to reinvent the wheel too much. I mean, like, the founding fathers got a lot of things very right. And it'll just be like USA 2.0, right? Like America 2.0 powered by Bitcoin. And when that happens, you know, I'll be moving there. You know, I'm sure you would. I'm sure, you know, it's just going to suck up all the builders, engineers, thinkers, creator, like the highest cut of people into this place, and you know, be the basis for the new world in the same way that America was. And then I think everywhere else, we're just going to see plunges into horrific communism and poverty. And it'll just be up to the individual to decide. Do you want to be free and operate on Bitcoin, or do you want to be a slave and operate on fiat? And, you know, the choice, like when we go to school, I don't know how it was for you when you went to school, but for me up here in fucking Marxist Canada, the whole school thing was, oh, you got the right and the left and you got the Nazis and the communists. But really, none of that shit exists or fucking matters when you break it into state control versus individualism. Bitcoin is individualism and fiat is state control, and every single person of that has not been brainwashed, that is fresh onto the stage of the world, will make the choice to be an individual over to be a slave. And, you know, so that gives us hope. Like, that instinctive stuff I was saying, where like Bitcoin is an instinctive wiring, that is like, when you understand Bitcoin, it's like, it feels, you can feel it in your soul, right? To understand and accept, you know, to accept communism, you're going against every instinct that we have as a human being. And capitalizing on the one, you know, that they use as a weapon against us, which is like for the greater good for other people. But yourself, you're essentially committing suicide as a socialist. That's what you're doing. And, you know, when there's a clear choice, no one's going to go to the one way. So I think one country will be the first place, I think, and then it'll just slowly be another one after that and another one after that. And then we're going to get to this kind of, you know, 50-50 point maybe one day, where half the world is running on Bitcoin and prosperous and the other half is, you know, rulers and communism and just fucked up stuff. And, you know, maybe that's as far as it goes. But like the America as we know it will be powered by Bitcoin. And then I think how we get there, how we ensure that it happens, is people just got to be building and just got to be finding a way, learning skills and finding a way to, I mean, like the great thing about Bitcoin is it's everything. It's money. So it's everything. So no matter what you're doing, no matter what industry you're working in, what you're, you know, what you're up to, if you make the choice to accept Bitcoin, to use Bitcoin as your savings, to participate in the Bitcoin economy, you know, your business is now a Bitcoin business. You know, you could be a you know, a lumberjack, and if you're accepting Bitcoin and keeping cash reserves for your company in Bitcoin and whatever, like, you're a Bitcoin business. Right. I think, and I try to get, like, so, you know, when you're going around talking to people, like, it's important that you and everyone else don't waste time talking about Bitcoin to people who just don't care or aren't ready to hear it, or are, you know, investment banker type suits that just think they know, are genius. Like, just don't waste your energy on those people. Instead, like, what one of my big pushes that I'm going to be working on, focusing on over the next year here, once I got, like, my current obligations wrapped up, is pushing Bitcoin into rural communities, and getting connected with the farmers, and getting connected with the oil guys, getting connected with carpenters, getting connect trades. Like, I feel like the best people that you can really connect the Bitcoin message to are the people who are working in the trades and that are producing. They're kind of like the Atlas characters, you know, they're holding up the world. You know, the people in the cities have no idea what's sacrificed for their comfort. And you will never convince the fucking ivory tower intellectual with 15 degrees that Bitcoin is the way forward, ever. But you can explain, you know, to a guy who's a pipe fitter, and he's going to fucking get it, because, you know, Bitcoin's not that complicated. How it operates, how it works, how it was built, how it was discovered, all the everything that had to happen for it to exist is complicated. But, you know, number go up, HODL. It's pretty fucking simple. Start accepting Bitcoin. It's a simple strategy. Projects. If you need, if you're not 100% sold on it, just like getting small companies to start putting 10% of their profits into Bitcoins on every quarter, just like small things like that. Those are the victories, because I don't give a fuck, man, if these fucking cockroaches in the cities use Bitcoin. They're cheering in this socialism shit. They're cheering in to be slaves, to have their rights removed. That, like, these aren't the people that are going to drive the world forward under any circumstance. You know, it with or without this great reset, with or without Bitcoin, right? The people who drive the world are the guys with rough hands. And, you know, and then also just for anything in your living, like, if you got friends in trades, then all of a sudden everything you need to do just becomes easier, because you have connections to people who are skilled workers.
100%.
You know, and that's existing. And then we got to do things to encourage, like, my children, for sure, they're going to be working, with their hands. They're going to be learning, you know, they won't be intellectuals, you know, because it's not, despite what we may think right now, or like, this may sound wrong to some people, but, like, we don't like to not use our hands. As people, we don't like that. We're not fulfilled by sitting at a fucking computer, you know, like, clicking away on trade. Like, I cannot think, I'm specifically talking about trading bankers. Like, there is nothing more useless, right? And soul sucking. And these guys, you know, that's why they all have coke habits and are fucking assholes. And, you know, you cannot fulfill your fucking soul without using your hands, using your body, physically moving, physically create, like, especially as a man, you know, without making stuff. And so make more stuff. I think one of the best things that somebody can do, if anybody's out there having trouble getting ahead in life, just fucking throw away your smartphone. Just fucking get rid of it, man. It's fucking that easy. Just get rid of it. And you'll be so fucking bored within a half day that you're going to be doing something. You know, or however long it takes, like, go to a flip phone, learn to use T9 again, text your fucking buddies, tell everybody that you're not using a fucking smartphone anymore. So they know, you know, I keep one. I'm trying to go through the transition right now. It's pretty hard. I don't have, like, a huge problem with it, but I know some people do. Like, some people just sit on their fucking phone all afternoon. It's like, this is, like, how you can fucking help Bitcoin. Like, just fucking do anything. You know, don't be a cog in the whole social media machine or the whole, like, don't, you know, be the product of somebody else's grand plan, you know, just fucking go out and do something. And yo, also, like, cause now I'm talking about going out and do something, and like, some people might be like, man, well, I don't know what to do. Well, you're not going to think in the same way that central planning is disastrous and never fucking succeeds. You are not going to centrally plan your fucking way to a better life, or your way to doing what you want, or your way to finding your plan. You're not going to sit there and think your way to happiness, or to having a job that's fulfilling or whatever. You got to go and just start with whatever you think, whatever your best bet is, just fucking start doing that, you know? And as you start doing that, you'll find maybe something else, and you're like, oh, maybe that's cool. And then, like, every time you think it's something else, you just change and switch gears, and, you know, it's okay to bounce around, because that's the way you discover what you fucking care about. Is through action, you know, and it can be, and it's hard, right? Mm-hmm. We want to get there immediately today, but you can't. And the only way you're going to get there is by starting, right? The journey of a meal. When I don't want to do the fucking dishes in the kitchen, man, that, like, and you can practice discipline with these small fucking things, like, just do the fucking dishes, man, right? Well, when you say that to yourself, it's still tough. So what I just do is, like, okay, I'm going to do one fucking fork. So then I clean the one fork, and then I'm like, I'll just instinctively be like, okay, I'm going to do this knife now. And I'll be like, okay, the pan's easy. I'll do the pan. And then I'm like, fuck it. And then next thing you know, man, all the dishes are fucking done. Like, it just fucking happens. Like, you got to get started with, no matter how small. So.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I see the same thing. It's time and time again. In my life, I get stuck in these ruts of just, like, overthinking everything, trying to plan, like, what the next year is going to look like, strategize, like, like, trying to get the mental models all perfect, you know. But it's so, you just get your mind tied up in these knots, and it's just really fucked. It can get bad. But as soon as I'm, like, taking action, actually just doing things and moving forward, putting one step in front of the other, you know, things just become so much more simple. So the process just kind of opens up, right? That's great, dude.
Yeah, and like, you don't know, you gotta try it, right?
Okay? Yeah,
like, record 10 podcast episodes, and if on episode 8 you feel like you've accomplished, like, don't do the last two, or maybe do the last two, or whatever. Move on to whatever you thought of throughout those broadcasts. Like, it's just like, through action is the only way we find what we need next.
Amen. Dude, I think that's a great place to end things. Thank you so much for coming on. I think this was an awesome conversation, and I really look forward to, like, having more conversations like this, you know, you and I in person when we meet up again, and maybe record some more pods. I like that.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I had a blast. It was great chatting with you. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm hoping I can get down into the States here sometime soon, kind of figuring out how to do that. A lot of logistics these days. But yeah, love to see you again, and, you know, good luck with everything that you're up to and working on. And yeah, let's keep in touch and do this again sometime. And hell yeah, man.
Thanks, brother. Anything you want to plug? Can I send people to your Twitter?
I'm at Spacebowl on Twitter, MVDEX. It's Madex, and the A is upside down, you know, like Bulgaria. Anyway, and at Spacebowl. So follow me there, and, you know, keep an eye out on the art I'm putting out. And if you see something you like, I'd love you to have it. I got stuff all over the world now, and it's just, I'm so excited to, like, contribute a little bit. Like, I feel like the little piece of art, some of it, it's like little shots of espresso for people.
Yeah, you
know, getting up in the morning like that. So yeah. And yeah, I really like, I'm proud of my Twitter and all the shit I say on there. And yeah, just rock and roll. Feel free to message me, whatever, you know, I'm available. And just pushing forward. So Godspeed, awesome. You guys, and you too, John. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, brother. Thanks, man. Cheers. Yeah, thanks for coming on. And thank you all for listening. If you want more information about the Bitcoin Path, go to the website, bitcoinpath.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at Bitcoin Path. I'm John Chenot. Follow me at John Chenot, J-O-N-C-H-E-N-O-T. And hit me up with any questions or comments or feedback. And with that, until next time, may you live a meaningful life and enjoy your freedom as a sovereign individual. Thanks.